8. Sid led the way, climbing the ladder while the other three waited below. Maddie followed at a brisk pace until her head rose above the level of the hatch, where she froze. Sid took her by the hand and pulled her the rest of the way up, as Maddie was too stunned by what she saw to offer more than a half-hearted attempt at climbing any further herself. Brewster followed, concentrating on the ladder in his hands instead of his sister's behavior. As he reached the top, he cast his eyes around for a handhold on the floor above, saw the room the floor was part of, and his mind ground to a halt, choking on the task of processing the data coming in from his optic nerves. As Maddie had theorized before, the ladder and hatch led from the gondola into the interior of the envelope, the cigar-shaped fabric structure that usually contained the lighter-than-air gas and held the dirigible aloft. One would normally expect to see large bladders full of gas secured to a metal framework, but there were none. Gigantic, hoop-shaped trusses, like those that might support the lighting rig at a large rock concert, only turned on their sides, ran the length of the interior of the envelope, reducing in size as they formed the tapered ends. They defined the shape of the dirigible from the outside, and the boundaries of what appeared to be Gilbert and Sid's living quarters inside. Toward the rear of the envelope, they saw a charming two-story Victorian house behind a prim cluster of rose bushes and an impeccable lawn. Up at the nose, there stood a two-story stucco McMansion, painted in a manner meant to make it look like an ancient Tuscan villa, but which actually made it look like a 10-year-old olive garden. The swimming pool, hot tub, outdoor kitchen, bar, and what appeared to be a DJ station all had a similar and similarly inappropriate faux antique finish. Brewster said, "This can't be. It's a lighter than air ship. Houses are heavier than air." "And the swimming pool," Maddie said. How does this all stay up without any helium?" Sid stood straight and tall, his arms spread wide, and in the high-pitched voice of a cartoon gnome, said,
"What makes you think there's no helium?"
"Don't pay attention to him," Gilbert said in a perfectly normal voice. "He's just messing with you."
Sid waved the end of his walking stick in small circles in front of his throat, then in his regular voice said,
"Terribly sorry. Couldn't resist. Just a bit of dirigible humor. The air's perfectly safe in here. Nothing but oxygen and nitrogen, just like on the ground."
"Only less smelly,"
Gilbert added, walking to the edge of the lawn to look down at the city below. Sid joined him.
"Yes, thankfully."
Maddie and Brewster followed them, their steps growing slower and more tentative as they got closer to the edge. The envelope itself seemed mostly transparent. The fabric that looked so solid and opaque from the outside let in a tremendous amount of light, providing a spectacular view of London by gaslight. The seams and folds of the canvas and the outlines of the advertising mural painted on the outside remained barely visible but tended to fade away as the twins instead focused on the panoramic view. Gilbert waved his ebony walking stick. Two of the poolside chairs slid across the floor and stopped right behind Brewster and Maddie.
"Please," Gilbert said. "Have a seat." Brewster and Maddie sat down.
Two more chairs slid over of their own accord, and Gilbert and Sid sat down opposite the twins.
"You see, kids," Gilbert began, "there are people in the world who can do things. Things that most people believe impossible. Things that would amaze the staunchest skeptic. Sid and I are two such people. So are your parents. And so is Philip."
"Magic," Maddie said. "You're trying to tell us that you can do magic."
"You don't buy it? After all the stuff you've seen, everything that's happened, right up to how you got the chairs you're sitting in, and where those chairs are you gonna tell me magic isn't real?"
Brewster shook his head, while Maddie mumbled,
"I guess not."
Sid said,
Well, you should, because magic is not real. I mean, granted, we call what we do magic because that's the only way most people can make any sort of sense of it, including ourselves. But in truth, what you'd think of as magic is just a lot of old superstitions. Or that you've seen the spells, the tricks. It's all just a friendly veneer placed over a more complex and disquieting reality.
What is it?
Maddie asked.
What's going on?
Sid said, you, your parents, your home, your school, this planet, the solar system, the entire human race, and everything it has ever encountered is part of a computer program.
Brewster said,
I've heard that theory before.
Sure you have, Gilbert said. I bet your parents went out of their way to point it out. It'll make things easier to explain later.
Or indeed right now, Sid continued. And like most people, when presented with this concept, you either disregarded it out of hand or asked yourself if it would change anything about how you go about your life.
To which the answer is, not one bit, Gilbert said. Just because you're the product of an algorithm doesn't mean you can get out of paying the rent.
Quite. But Gilbert and I are here to tell you that it isn't just a fun idea. It's a fact. And it does affect how you will live the rest of your lives, because it is what has enabled your parents' predicament, Philip's disappearance, your day trip to the Victorian era, and your current position, 400 feet above London, in a lighter-than-air ship that is very much not.
Maddie studied the two men, looking for a sign that they might be joking.
You're saying we're in a computer program. How'd we get in it?
You were born in it,
Sid said. You're part of it. Everything you see, including each other, is a collection of potentialities described by a set of numbers in a file. By finding and changing those numbers or writing programs to do it for us, we can alter the world in some fairly surprising ways, as you've learned in the past few hours. We call the things we can do magic as a sort of shorthand, but there's nothing magical about it. It's just coding.
Brewster squinted at the magicians.
And that's how all of this was done? Our parents, Philip, transporting back to the house, coming back in time, this blimp?
Dirigible,
Sid and Gilbert both said.
Sid said, it's confusing, I know, but think about it. If you're an asset in a computer program, then everything about you is just information. Who you are, what you are, where you are, when you are, it's all just numbers. Numbers that can be edited.
How do you know this?
Maddie asked.
Gilbert smiled. See, there's this file floating around out there. There are loads of copies, hiding away in various places on the internet where no reasonable person would ever look. We looked.
We two met at university in late 2005 and dropped out to try our hands at a tech startup. We had an idea for a search engine that would help harness the power of serendipity.
Gilbert took over.
See, the problem with searching the internet is that the page you find is usually the one you want, but seldom the one you need. You punch in the words you think of to take you to the page you want, and it usually tells you what you kind of already knew, because that's what you searched for.
Typically, Sid said, one must click a few links, sometimes at random, to find the information one didn't know he or she vitally needs. We were attempting to create an engine that would bypass the pages full of things you already know, and instead take you directly to the file you needed.
Brewster asked,
and your search engine took you to the file that proves the world's a program?
Yes, Gilbert said. While we were running a test search for how to darn socks, so the test has to be counted as a failure. I mean, I guess you could use the file to repair the socks, but you'd have to admit that the engine's result was overkill. Sid shrugged.
I'd classify it as a calibration error.
Maddie said, And now you have the power to travel through time, mess with the laws of physics, and beam yourselves around like on Star Trek?
Both magicians nodded. Gilbert said, Yes.
Brewster furrowed his brow.
Who wrote the program? What does it do?
Gilbert said, We don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
Sid nodded.
I know that sounds odd. The first question everybody asks upon being told any of this is, Who wrote the program and what does it do? And the first answer they get is, We don't know, leading inexorably to the first argument they have about the program, which is invariably over how can we not have already ascertained those seemingly basic facts?
If this argument is so annoying to you, then why haven't you just figured out the answers?
Gilbert said, It's not that easy, is it? Just because we're part of the program doesn't mean we have access to every part of it, any more than a can of cola in an airliner's beverage cart can program the autopilot. We don't have access to any of the code, just the files that define the assets. All we know about the program itself is what we can learn from the world it creates. And trying to get anything from that is like trying to figure out who wrote Microsoft Word by looking at a single printed page of someone's letter to their aunt.
Maddie said, So you haven't figured out what the program does? Or why? Or for who? But you have figured out how to use it to give yourself superpowers?
Gilbert shrugged. Are you saying our priorities are out of whack?
No, I think that's pretty much what I'd do. So what happened? Somehow Mom and Dad found out your secret or got caught up with you somehow and had to be silenced?
What?
Sid asked.
Heavens no, not at all. Your parents didn't discover our secret. It's their secret too. They found the file all on their own, both of them. They're just like us.
Only more so, Gilbert said. If you think we're weird, wait until you get a load of how they live.
We know how they live, Maddie said. We live with them. They don't have any kind of magical powers.
Sid stared wide-eyed at Maddie.
How the devil can you say that, after everything you've witnessed today?
Gilbert said, Now, Sid, you might want to calm down a bit. These two have been through an awful lot.
That's precisely my point. They've been through a lot today, and all of it bolsters the conclusion that what we're telling them is true.
Maddie said,
What we've seen is something weird happening to Mom and Dad, and a bunch of other weird stuff happening around them, not them doing any of it. You're telling us that everything we know about our own parents is wrong, and we're just supposed to believe you and ignore what we've seen all our lives?
Brewster arched an eyebrow.
Besides, you want us to take your word for it that our parents have superpowers and lie to us about it, but when we tell you that Philip froze them, you don't want to buy it.
Gilbert said, Kids, it's just that we know Philip.
Yeah, and we know what we saw.
Gilbert said, You saw a closed door while stuff happened in the next room.
Maddie said,
But we heard
mumbling.
Gilbert interrupted.
Then yelling, but you couldn't make out any words.
Brewster asked,
But if you can travel in time and space, like you say, you can go to the moment Philip froze Mom and Dad. We can all go, and you'll see that he did it, and we can all find out why.
Sid nodded.
Logical, young man. Unquestionably logical. That is, in fact, the only reasonable course of action.
They all stared at each other for a long moment until Maddie said, Then let's go.
Gilbert said, We can't.
You just said you can go anywhere at any time.
Yeah, Gilbert said. But we can't go there.
Sid said,
The problem is, you see, we already tried. A few minutes ago, when we left you alone down in the gondola and we came up here to talk, the very first thing we did was try to go to the event to see what happened.
And?
Brewster asked.
It's like I told you, Gilbert said. We can't. Somebody set up a redirect. It's all just computer programming, and someone put some code in place to keep anyone from witnessing whatever happened. If anyone tries to go to that exact time and place, they get bounced back to where they started.
Maddie said, "That just proves that Philip is covering his tracks."
Gilbert shook his head. "It proves nothing. It just suggests. And anyway, we have no evidence that Philip set the redirect. It could have been anyone. Also, there are loads of reasons other than to cover their tracks that someone could make a redirect like that." Sid said,
"I'm afraid, Maddie, that every word in your sentence was incorrect, save for the 'that' at the beginning, which, to look on the bright side, was spot on. Just to be clear, we don't doubt any part of your story. We believe every word you've said to us is accurate. We just don't quite agree with the conclusion that Philip has hurt your parents. Your parents are frozen, but we don't know that they're hurt. And even if they are, and even if Philip did it, it's possible that he hurt them by accident."
"All too possible," Gilbert added. "Likely, even."
"But you'll help us?"
Brewster asked.
"Of course. We want to get to the bottom of what's going on with Philip. We think the world of your mother, and wish no specific ill on your father. We'd never even think of turning away their children in a time of need."
"Besides," Gilbert said, "what's the point of living in Victorian England if you can't solve a mystery now and then?"
Maddie sprung up from her seat. "Great, let's go."
Sid and Gilbert both put up their hands to slow her down. Gilbert said, "No, love. I'm afraid if we're going to help you, we'll have to insist on doing it our way."
"But our parents are frozen and Philip's getting away. We don't have any time to waste," Sid said. "We have all of the time to waste. We are time travelers. We can travel through time. We are in Victorian England at the moment. This supposed confrontation between your parents and Philip will not even occur until more than 100 years from now."
Brewster said, "It seems like you could use that as an excuse to put off doing anything you don't want to do." Sid said,
"Your description is needlessly insulting, dear chap. We prefer to think of it as an opportunity to put off doing anything we don't want to do, or, as in this case, to delay taking action until we've had time to think things through, to plan, to prepare."
Gilbert said, "For example, it's going to take a day to train the two of you in how to use magic."
Maddie and Brewster looked at the two magicians, thinking about what Gilbert had said and trying to determine if he was serious. When neither Gilbert nor Sid started laughing or yelling, "Psych!" Maddie said,
"I think that's a good idea."
Brewster nodded.
"Yes, I agree.
But why do you two think it's a good idea?"
Gilbert said, "Because we're going to be investigating, aren't we? And when you investigate, you learn things that other people are trying to keep you from learning. It could get gritty, if you know what I'm saying."
"Yes," Sid said. "Should something malodorous make high-velocity contact with what you Americans colloquially refer to as the fan, we'll be much more comfortable knowing you have the ability to defend yourselves. And the whole process will be much more convenient if you can fly and teleport yourselves to and fro, rather than depending on us for transportation like two impeccably dressed ponies. So what say you? Will you accept our assistance, even if it means enduring the inconvenience of delaying a day or so while we bestow magical powers upon you?"
Maddie tried hard to hide her excitement, which, as usual, only made it more obvious.
"Yeah, I think taking a day to think about things is probably wise."
Gilbert said, "We thought you might